Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hi, folks. I'm Jack Kennedy, and welcome to Farm Tech Talk, the livestock show. I'm back from my week off. Good to see the lads got over me in the week that was. Shout out to our supporters, your Milk Forum and Westland Agro, for helping us make this happen. I'm going to get once again talk to Adam, Aidan, and Darren. Aidan will join us later on, and so will John O'Loughlin from Grassland Agro. First up, I have Adam and Darren on the line. So, Adam, we normally start with the quick fire buzz around. I have one question coming in from last week. I'm not sure. It could be coming from William Woods. It's about dosing and dairy beef calves and suckler calves. But the question is more or less around that whole timing around dosing, in terms of, is there any difference? This farmer obviously has, well, let's just get the question, has sucklers and dairy calf to beef. And he's wondering, in terms of dosing, is there any difference between sucklers and the suckler spread stock and the dairy calf to beef stock in terms of the dosing timing?
Yeah, I suppose, Jack, there is a difference maybe in terms of your dairy calf to beef calves would possibly want to dose earlier maybe than your suckler calves. Your suckler calves tend to build up maybe more immunity during the year. But I suppose, look, at the be all and end all is going in a fecal sample, Jack. A lot of vets, a lot of labs do that. You go out with your little cup and take your sample, send it off, and that'll determine whether you need to dose or not. But I'd say definitely the dairy calf to beef will need a dose maybe quicker than the suckler calves, because they're generally, there's maybe a higher burden on pastures and they don't have as much immunity to worms.
Okay, super. Come back to you in just 2 seconds, Adam. Darren, I have one quick fire in for you here in terms of sheep. So the question goes like, dip the yos and lambs 6 weeks ago, starting to see twitching around the tails again now. Is that all I'm going to get out of the dip in terms of protection?
Yeah, Jack, yeah, that's quite a common question, and it always comes up, maybe a bit early. It's usually sort of the end of July, because fellas who have dips, they expect to get a bit longer, because we're used to maybe looking at Click or the likes of dim products and getting anywhere from sort of 8, 10 up to 16 weeks, and even with the Click Extra, even a bit longer. But no, the dipping products, Jack, you're looking at a cover of 5 to 8 weeks. And I would always be saying that they're probably more suited coming towards the end of the season, and you can get sort of, I suppose, maybe a bit of a treatment ahead of breeding for yours as well. But look at, it's not a fault of the product. He can go back in and put a bit of pour on or something to just top it up at the moment.
That's it, and get dagging. Okay, folks, that's it. Remember to email your questions, farmtechtalk@farmersjournal.ie, or WhatsApp 086-836-6465. Adam, coming back to you in terms of, I suppose, the whole suckler and beef job. Like, I mean, you have a big focus this week in terms of global trade and what's happening out there. Like, I mean, that's, like, it really is. Like, I mean, the prices, like, that we haven't seen for kind of, what is it, 5, 6, 7 years in terms of the beef prices?
It's actually 8 years, Jack. Yeah, June 2013, I think, was the last time we hit close to €5 actually. We're not just quite there yet, but we're definitely heading that way. Very, very positive, Jack. Paul Bia held a meat market seminar last week to update, I guess, the industry on where they're at. And there's nothing really negative in that. Global trade doing very, very well. You know, and you're basically supply and demand, Jack. I wrote in the paper this week about going to lectures. You probably were lectured by him as well, Seamus Sheehy, Professor Seamus. Didn't listen all the time, but I will say I remember a graph going up on supply and demand and just showing, we'll say, you know, when supply is high and demand is low, the price is low. And when supply is low and demand is high, the price is high. And that's basically, it's almost too simple, but that's basically what's happened. You've China driving the global trade, the beef imports up 20% for the first 5 months. You've UK beef production down 5%, you've EU production down 2%. We're going to be back 6% on the Irish kill. So supplies are tight and we've seen demand maintain. Like retails, we'll say sales up 7% on 2019 levels. We're seeing a food service recovery across Europe and we're seeing less import pressure coming into Europe. 7%, Brazilian imports down 7%, Argentinian imports down 22% into Europe. So that's all sort of combining and the stars are just aligning at the moment for Irish beef finishers and hopefully it'll keep that way.
So the market sentiment is good. And Adam, that's the global trade and that's all that's happening out there in terms of the market trade, I suppose, and in terms of the impact from kind of farmers today and tomorrow. I mean, is it positive? Is it remaining positive? Is it up and nudge or what's happening?
It is, Jack. It's staying pretty positive. I know Shane Murphy took a look at Mark Bids figures this week and he's looking sort of somewhere between 80 and 95 euros there, the rest of the weanland sales. So weanland sales, we just had one or two the previous week. Ivora was one of those. But since that, we've had more in Six Mile Bridge, Ennis, Portumna this week. All very, very good. Very, very active. A lot of northern customers. I was in a Finn Monday night. Again, a dream. 650 kilo bullocks hitting 1800. And you know, a lot of those people around the ring are big, big finishers. They're not doing that on a whim. And they know what beef price they're going to get for those animals. So there's a lot of confidence around those rings at the moment and it's really good to see it. And I think you'll see quite a positive weanland trade as well because finishers at the moment are obviously getting good returns. You know, the average price of a 350 kilo steer at the moment is up 250, 280 ahead. So obviously they're going to come back around the ring pretty strong.
That was one of the social comments I saw last week after your piece there. Adam was talking up the price of weanlands, 150 euros, not happening at all out there. Like, you know, I mean, there's more sales coming on. There's more real information coming through. It's definitely up, Adam, is it?
Absolutely, yeah. As I said, between 80 and 95, and that's taken in a lot of data over the last week in terms of weanland sales, you know, and taking in those big marts in Ennis, Portumna, and a couple of others as well. So we've more data this week to support that figure. I suppose Mike Bissan on that sale in Ivora, he was up 150, but definitely since that, we're seeing a very positive weanland trade.
Yeah, Adam, I know you're under pressure. Just one more before you go on the beep dates. Just tell me in terms of kind of what's happening there, in terms of what the questions you're getting on beep dates, because I definitely had a couple of questions coming across this week.
Yeah, so it's an important one, Jack. I suppose out there at the moment, cull cows are a really good trade, and some farmers are saying, geez, I'm going to pull off. Maybe some of these cows are going to wean early and I'm going to go with those cull cows to the mart because they're really, you know, 220 a kilo there is to be got for those sort of heavy cull cows. So you'd be mad not to maybe capitalize on that price, but you need to be careful around beef because obviously you need the 4 weeks, meal feeding before you wean and then 2 weeks after. So if you kick on 6 weeks from now, you know, you're into part of that first week of September. So if you start meal feeding on the 22nd of July, you need to, the earliest you can wean is the 19th of August and then the earliest you can sell is the 3rd of September. And that kicks on every week, we'll say, you know, through that 6 week period. So while September may seem a long way away at the moment, you still need to be aware that you'll need to have receipts. You don't need to notify the Department of Agriculture when you're starting the meal feed, but you do need to have those dockets there to show that you have proof that you've bought meal to feed those weanlings. So just an important one around beep to be aware of.
100%. Adam, leave it at that. We'll chat again next week. Darren, to stay with you in terms of the schemes, I suppose, and what's happening out there. Any other big dates that we should be kind of thinking of, we'll say, this week in terms of deadlines or beep dates like we were just talking about there with Adam?
No, Jack, we're probably in a sort of quiet period at the moment. Yeah. There isn't a lot happening. The department have done their preliminary checks, so people will have got indications back to Ag Food and if there was any overclaims or anything amiss on that regard. Andy has a piece in this week about the straw and corporation measure. That was farmers getting letters incorrectly. There was about 100 farmers that say amended areas. And look, you can amend an area down, Jack. I suppose that's something we often get a question about is, can I take an area out of my single farm payment or ANC now? And the answer to that is, in most cases, you can make small, say deductions. You can't increase. If you increase, you're liable for a penalty. But if there's something, say, small that can be changed, or if it's to correct an obvious error, Well, then you can write into the department, and in most cases you can. And I suppose, Jack, the bigger one is you can't make an amendment if the department inspector is driving out the gate or he's coming to you the following day. So just to be careful of that.
Darren, yeah, no, good one. Like, I mean, okay, so as you say, that's the scheme's kind of a wrap up, and Adam had the piece on the beep. In terms of, I suppose, the trade again, in terms of you, do I see actually a kind of a nudge upwards in lamb prices this week? Is it fair to say?
Yeah, so lamb prices went up around 10 cent a kilo over the weekend, Jack, and that came on top of, say, 20 cent a week before. And that's all been driven, that's a rebound, has been driven by Eid al-Adha, which is kicks off next Monday. So that's the Muslim religious festival. Lasts from, say, Monday to Friday, the 19th to 23rd, but really the buying is concentrated around the 19th and 20th, so Monday and Tuesday. And like I would expect, Jack, given the reports that the factories will probably hit a kill, I'd say north of 70,000 for the week on by. 2 years ago, they actually hit a kill of 78 or 80,000. But I'd say to be north, I'd say 72,000, 73,000. We can review next week, but definitely they're busy. Some plants are killed last Saturday and are killing again tomorrow, Jack, to say. So there is a good bit of interest, and say that increase in price did have the desired effect. At this time last week, a lot of factories were actually worried whether they'd have enough lambs, because I suppose they were concerned that a lot of flocked weaning, maybe that it's coming at a bad time, say for some of the later lambing flocks. But what they've seen is that a lot of the producer groups would say a lot of their members drafted down in the weight, that they really honed in on any lambs that were fit. And look at the right, Jack, before weaning, get them gone at a higher price. Now, there is a bit of a caution to that, in that factories have also said that lambs finished off grass, there would be maybe short of flesh. That just as a caveat and a caution on that, because they have seen an increase in lambs coming in below the cutoff of 16 or 17 kilos, and that's something that farmers should just be mindful of.
Yeah.
Look, at the question on everyone's lips, Jack, is will it hold next week? How long will it last next week? I suppose there will be a bit of buying on Monday, Tuesday, and Tuesday for the festival. It will still be going on because some of the orders, they like to have lambs killed, say, right up to date. And after that, it depends on if there's a lull in the trade. But one of the things I think that probably help it is fellas have been so aggressive in drafting and drafted down on the weights. And also weaning is probably going to take place now in a lot of flocks. I could see numbers just tightening, and hopefully that will help to keep it flow under the trade.
I mean, that's one element, I suppose, Darren, that lads are asking question again, the whole weaning piece. Like, I mean, I suppose we're coming up to kind of a right good time for weaning, depending on if you're March lambing with the mid-March lambing or on Paddy's Day. I mean, are lads holding off from weaning and trying to get another draft away? Like, are they just weaning and tidying things up like now?
Yeah, I suppose it all depends on grass supplies. Like if I look at Tullamore and what Sean was doing there, we had a good draft of lambs last week. We talked to Justin last week with the first draft, 18 lambs averaged 130 euros. We had another 35 lambs that got the benefit of that 20 cent increase last week and averaged just shy of 137 euros, killed out nearly maximum weight of 21 kilos. Lambs there are killing a bit better. It's the first year where I suppose they've had no setback in regards to drought or grass supplies.
Yeah.
And Sean probably could have weaned last week or could have weaned the start of this week, but he's going to leave it to the next week because grass supplies are good, just to get that last draft away before weaning. Because you're going to see the kill out will probably drop 1 to 2 percentage points. So it'll have an impact. Like lambs that you could draft maybe at 42, 43, 44 kilos might need to be 45 or 46 after weaning to get the same.
Yeah. Darren, last one, grassland management. Like there is it fair to say, and again, you know, Everton's local, but I mean, in terms of like, there's plenty of grass around there and there's plenty of good quality grass. Is it fair to say, is it after grass coming up after first cut and the whole lot? Like, I mean, are most of your guys adequate grass supplies?
Yeah, Jack, there was a bit of a pinch period there about 10 days ago where fellas didn't get silage maybe cut as early as they want. But a lot of fellas just readjusted and they maybe gave swards a bit of a rest and put maybe lambs into fresh swards that mightn't be exactly ideal to graze out where they wanted, but they put them in at a higher grass height, maybe of 9 or 10 centimetres, and they took them out at 5 or 6 or even 7 centimetres in cases just before they went into that lower quality grass, and now they're going into after grass swards. And I think, look, at a lot of the later lambing flocks need to be looking at that this week. This mightn't be weaning maybe for 2 or 3 weeks' time. It's decisions made today and tomorrow now that will influence the grass supply. And like we do see, there was a bit of a delay, and some of them farms would be in glass. They haven't cut traditional hay meadows because obviously the weather broke on the 1st of July and they were waiting for this forecast, I suppose. What way would you call it, Jack? The bit of a heat wave that's supposedly coming. Great. And they're probably going to cut some of them in the next week. So look, at a lot of them fellas will maybe have spread a bit of fertilizer on other swards to just freshen it up. And that's, I suppose, a question we often get at this time of the year. If I have plenty of grass, should I still be shaking fertilizer? And yeah, the answer to that is, look, even a small shake will help keep quality and help keep grass fresh and stop it from stemming out. The risk of that is slightly gone now because it was more of a risk a few weeks ago when grass came under pressure. But it's still no harm to keep swards freshened up, and it will have an impact on lamb performance after this.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. Darren, 100%. Leave it at that. Plenty of information on the sheep side again in the paper this week. You can go and soak up sunshine along with the Galway hurlers there. You have plenty of time to do that now for the rest of the summer. Aidan, coming to you. I was talking to John O'Loughlin earlier about the Clare and Tipperary hurlers. He's very bitter over the fact that your man got the sin bin there just in the second half, said it had an impact on the whole team. Like, you probably saw a different side of it.
I sure did, yeah. It'll be interesting now how we do against Limerick on Sunday, but sure. Clare test will be not much won't be as strong as the next one.
Correct. Yeah, no. Clare are hitting for Wexford, and so it's Davy against the fullback again this weekend as well. So, Aidan, in terms of, I know you're on the road and you're in and out between farms. In terms of, I suppose, the whole piece, you hit a summit there summit last week. You did an online seminar effectively between New Zealand and Ireland. It was effectively live on both sides, even though we're at opposite ends of the clocks as you. It was effectively live on both sides. You were streaming live between both countries. What was, maybe we just kind of start in terms of what's the objective of it, or why kind of have that kind of a setup? And I presume it was online because you couldn't be in virtual, etc. It had to be in virtual because of the COVID and all that. Yeah.
Yeah. So there was about 100 people in New Zealand, and the rest was about 200 people then looking in online from around the world, but mostly in Ireland and New Zealand. I suppose the reason for it, Jack, is like, you know, you've travelled the world looking at dairy farms, and I've travelled half the world, you could say, looking at dairy farms. And like all the vast majority of the milk around the world is produced in indoor systems. And that's the same, you know, and it's okay, the UK and England is kind of half inside, half outside, but all around Europe, it's all indoors. And that's, you know, those cows are fed primarily a maize and concentrate based diet. And there's a massive amount of money and investment in that sector to advance yields, both in terms of cows, but also in terms of maize and corn, and you know, because there's such money in it. Yeah. So you know, you plant maize every year, so the seed is sold every year. There's massive money and research and development funding for that. Then you look at our sector, so Ireland and New Zealand are grass-based countries. There's not near as much investment in R&D in terms of grassland and research and all that kind of that whole area. So the thinking is we need to pool our resources, and that's the kind of the back around the Pasture Summit. Look, this one that we did last week, it was focused on the environment. It's a get together of like-minded farmers and researchers, and I suppose working together to pool resources and discuss the issues that are topical. And look, there's no more topical issue at the moment than sustainability and water quality. And the key one of the key main lessons from the feedback I'm getting from both from New Zealand and Ireland is that farmers didn't realize that we've such common problems. And in Ireland, we think our government is forcing us down this, you know, talking about sustainability and picking on us. And New Zealand think that their government is doing the same thing from them. Now, you know, obviously, look, it's just the issues that are there. And it's about finding ways then around that and how we can work together to solve some of these issues.
Yeah, no, and often the case is, Aidan, that the kind of the bad story is put out there to try and get change, you know, and we even see that with the water report this week from the EPA. You know, I mean, even though the trend over the last, you know, 20, 30 years has been for improving water quality in general, is the negative spin is put on it, and the negative spin against agriculture is put on it just to, I suppose, to force more change, to force that discussion, et cetera, and that kind of thing, because agriculture is important, you know. So, I mean, that negative spin has been in New Zealand for a good while now as well.
It has, earlier than there was here, Jack, to be honest. Like, you know, I mean, Dirty Dairy was coined over in New Zealand. Thankfully, look, it's not, it's, you know, we don't hear much of it today, but like that EPA report, like farmers would be very frustrated from that, because the spin being put out by the EPA is that, you know, things are getting worse, but in actual fact, things are getting better. And rather than encouraging farmers to continue the road they're on and maybe speed up in some cases, like it's kind of seen as another negative for dairy farming and for farming in general. So, yeah. I mean, it's the messaging around it is my main issue. I mean, like, and like, you know, water quality, it's not, I think we're second best in Europe, and we're improving. So like, that's the kind of the main thing, I think. And like, farmers should take heart from that statistic and say we need to continue and keep going as we are. And that was the message from Pastor Summit as well, is that, like, you know, there are certain things we need to work on, and there are certain issues that, you know, that we're being picked on, and certain things that we're probably getting a negative press on, which is, you know, like not realistic, but that we there are other areas that we're good on, and we can continue to talk about that.
Yeah, and again, like the messaging this week, like there's nothing about the kind of initiatives that are ongoing at farm level or the investments that farmers are making. Like, I mean, there's millions and millions spent every day in farmyards, you know, and it's as if, you know, all farmers are laggards, or everyone's branded in the, yeah, with the one brush. Like, I mean, that's what's kind of what happens a lot of farmers, is say, isn't it?
Yeah, and like I was just thinking earlier on, it's like as though, you know, the feeling is that we woke up in the 1970s and said, okay, we're gonna pollute the world, you know, this is what we're going to do, we're gonna damage water quality in Ireland. But sure, that's just not the case. Like, I mean, and farmers follow research and science, and the science at that time was telling us this is what we should do, and now the science is saying that that's actually not, we shouldn't be doing that, we should be doing something else. And that's the direction farmers are going in, you know, low emission slurry spreading, these acid programs which are making huge benefits, and that's the way it is, and that's what's, and I mean, look, we all have a part to play, the Farmers Journal, ourselves, as individuals, and then the farming community as well. So
Yeah, it is. And there's no one putting their hands up and saying, leave us alone, you know, but just to work with us. I mean, the other piece I talked to John on earlier was this whole piece around carbon, Aidan, and kind of carbon measurement. And like he and Grassland Agro are getting a lot of kind of, I suppose, inquiries and you know, people talking about carbon. Was there any chat on that on the summit, or did you kind of keep it focused on the kind of water and that?
It was more focused on water quality. But I mean, in New Zealand, they're not keen. In terms of carbon sequestration, which is something that we're looking at and talking about here, and sometimes it's seen as being the silver bullet to a lot of our problems, but they're not as keen on sequestration as we are. They don't think, in their research that they've done, they don't see as much sequestration as maybe we're some of our measurements here are suggesting. So we don't know. But I mean, and the other thing is, Jack, they haven't near as much habitat area or biodiversity and hedgerows as we have. So we're probably ahead of the game there compared to New Zealand. So that's why we're probably more focused on it. But yeah, and I mean, I'm getting that every day. Every farmer I go on to, they're talking about sequestration and hedgerows and all that. But at the moment, Jack, we've no way of measuring it, and that's kind of main. Well, we have, but it's not being utilized. There's no one measure that people can use. So until we get that there, like, you know, we're only talking among ourselves and getting nowhere with it. So we need to see real action here, and hopefully the signpost program will deliver some of that.
Yeah, the one piece that John mentioned was your article with James Humphreys and that farm in Solihull, and the fact that they had some measurements on it, and the fact that there wasn't a huge change in carbon sequestration over the years, etc.
That kind of thing. Siobhan Walsh
had that as well, like, you know, and I think it just that's one specific farm. That was one farm that has been very well drained and whatever, and
it's very high levels of carbon in it, Jack. Correct. You know, I mean, like I think their organic matter levels in that farm are 9, 10, 11%. And if you take half of that, then as being carbon, that's the average amount of carbon in the soil. So, and I think that's what the New Zealanders are saying as well, that they have high levels of carbon in their soils as it is. And, you know, where it's like filling a bath with water, like when it's full, you can't put any more into it. That's kind of the feeling I'm getting about, and that's why Solihull is there, but maybe, you know, in Curtin's end could be completely different. They might be able to sequester an awful lot more carbon, and tillage farms the same way because they're very low.
Yeah, and maybe there are things that farmers can do, whether it's clover or multi-species or whatever, as you say, to kind of improve it. I mean, that is the one other piece, Aidan, I'll leave you go on this, is it's clover. You know, it's mid-July. We're beginning to see a lot more clover on farms, it's fair to say. And, you know, the usual stuff in terms of guys will be you know, worried about bloat and prone, you know, different, you know, animals prone to bloat, etc., and how to prevent it, etc., and that kind of thing. Like, I mean, are you getting much of that on the ground?
Yeah, so there's two things. There's more clover being sown, and hence there's more clover on farms. And secondly, this is a good year for clover anyway, because it was kind of dry for the last couple of weeks. And after a dry spell, it tends to take off. And so, you know, you're going to see a lot more clover on farms, which is great. It's a good thing. That's what we want to see. And the big fear I have now is that you're going to see certain days or certain paddocks is going to get cows with bloat. And that can really turn farmers off ever using clover again. And that's, you know, we have plenty of experience in that. We all know a farmer who won't use clover because they had unfortunately they lost a few cows with it. So you need to manage it. Like, that's the first thing. Like, if you have cows that are hungry, going into a field with a lot of clover in it and have free access to that, for, you know, if you're typically getting two or three grazes out of that field, it's a high risk case in that situation. So I'd say put up a strip wire. Give them a 12-hour break. I don't think you need to go much shorter than that. Some farmers would say only give them 3 or 4 hours, but there's a lot of work in that. So I think still just leave them back to the 12 hours. And I suppose just watch that when they're going into it, that they're not overly hungry, that they're going to gorge themselves. Because that's the risk, like, you know, that they eat all the clover, really lush grass. And then they, you know, they start bloating up then after that.
Correct, yeah. So force them down into the sward is what you're saying, like, you know what I mean?
It's giving them the fiber.
The stem more than leaf, like, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, mixing it, you know, sort of eating stem and leaf together, and then it's creating more of a, I suppose, a kind of a buffer then in the rumen, and it's not allowing the froth to build up, and that's kind of the key thing there to prevent the bloat then.
Yeah, the only thing that I leave you on this, Aidan, the other piece, you know, heifer rearing, we had a webinar there with Dairy Link this week, and Aidan Cushing up the north in terms of, you know, just keeping a track on heifers. It's middle of July, what can you do? But I mean, his point is that, listen, get a weight on them. If you have a cohort, if you have like 10, 20% of the heifers that are, you know, a little bit below target, that maybe pull them out as a separate group and they'll do a storm for the next couple of weeks and months, you know, before they hit the shed. And it's a trick well worthwhile, you know, to try and move them along.
Definitely, yeah, particularly for the heifer calves, like, that's where you're going to see the real progress on it. The older animals, like, you know, there's not a lot you can do really with the older ones, the ones that are in calf at this stage, you'd be hoping. But even if they are lighter ones, spitting them out and giving them the better grass ahead of the main bunch will actually turn them inside out as well. But I mean, I suppose they need to be at the weights that they're going, you know, if they're in calf now, you only have so much time to put the weight on them. And I suppose the key thing then is to work on the heifer, so you're not going to have lighter ones in the following year, if that makes sense.
Okay, Aidan, fair play. Thanks for that. I know you're off to another farm. Earlier, I had a chat with John O'Loughlin about some of the issues I've just discussed with Aidan. Let's have a listen. The Clare hurlers are out to fight revenge against the Wexford guys this weekend again. Talk to me. It's the fullback versus the goalie once again. It's going to be an exciting weekend. Yeah,
It's going to be an exciting weekend for sure. Listen, we won't go into maybe the travesty that we suffered, Jack. You were big enough off air to tell me that it was definitely not a penalty. So we really appreciate that in Clare. But no, looking forward to the weekend now. It's going to be a cracker. Hot weather and a free ball. So we hopefully get one over on Wexford now again.
Absolutely, like, yeah, if you're dependent on the referee, John, is never a good place to be, like. Listen, John, there was plenty of stats on Wikipedia there about James Owens and what he was good and what he wasn't good for, says you, and how close the penalty was to the goal, or how close the free was to the goal. But anyway, look at it. I mean, yeah, no, it is what it is. John, in terms of, I suppose, there's one piece in the news, I suppose, a lot this, you know, in the last week, in the last months, in the last year, and that's that whole piece around carbon and measuring carbon. And like, there's very few farmers that are actually measuring carbon or organic matter. I mean, is your team getting many kind of requests in terms of measuring carbon on farms? Or I suppose, what do you reckon is the kind of level of understanding in terms of what really carbon measurement means at farm level?
Yeah, sure. There's a huge interest in it, Jack, is the first thing. And I suppose if we're going to get closer to 0.7 of a kilogram of carbon per fat and protein corrected kilo, we have to probably account for what we're actually sequestering. Mm-hmm. And there's a huge advantage, in my opinion, for beef, dairy and sheep to actually further market our product, because that's what it boils down to. And Jack, that's what the consumer wants now.
Yeah.
You know, there's a huge shift for less carbon intensity. I think it's a huge opportunity for the industry, no doubt. I think there's a huge amount of research that has to come. I suppose talking to other maybe colleagues that we work with in the industry, there's a lot of work going on around hedgerows and biodiversity and actually quantifying how much carbon they're sequestering, because that's key. Because we know they're there for an awful long time. We know we're very unique, that people come from other countries, they drive through the countryside, they see all this greenery, and we're not getting the credit for it. So really excited to see that develop on farm. There's a couple of farmers doing it, I suppose, as part of our site sustainability program, we're actually doing it, Jack. So we're trying to get as much understanding of it as we can, and help to maybe show that farmers maybe that 1.13 is actually a little bit lower, which is really important, I think, going forward as we try to sell our products in an export business.
Okay, so as you say, once we get the numbers on it, as you say, and once the research catches up and that whole piece catches up around the science of it, you see it as an advantage for the Irish industry and I suppose those type of farms, the grassland-based farms that we're kind of seeing. I mean, you were involved in the Grass 10 farm up in the sheep event that was on in the last couple of days, John. I mean, that type of a farm you feel will benefit big time from, you know, getting a real good handle on the carbon that it's storing and the carbon that it's emitting, etc.
Most definitely, Jack. Like, so it was a brilliant Grass 10 event there last week, Wednesday night. There was a fierce excitement when Denmark went 1-0 up, but it was short-lived. There was actually a murmur throughout the crowd, and we didn't know what was after causing this excitement. But like that farm especially, because I suppose on the farm, Peter and Tom McGuinness, Jack, they're a mixed enterprise. So they're finishing cattle, they have ewes and lambs, and they have tillage. So on the tillage side, there's probably a real big opportunity there to increase carbon storage, recover crops, chopping straw. But even in grassland, there's a huge opportunity to do that. I know maybe some of the articles that Aidan had with James Humphreys maybe showed that they were at saturation. But that's a higher organic matter side, number one, Jack.
Right.
There's a lot of reseeding for trials. There's a lot of drainage work as well. And that's all going to release carbon. So it's really about the key thing that we have to do as an industry is as soon as possible is establish the baseline. And that's a key focus for the department soil sampling contract that they've recently launched as well.
You know, John, in fairness, you mentioned that farm Solihull and James Humphreys and the trials and the carbon that he's talking about there maybe not increasing massively over time. But I mean, speaking of that farm, that's a heavily drained farm, as you say, big drains all around the outside, say 2 and 3 meters deep, like we'll say, to try and improve it so that, you know, livestock can carry livestock. But in terms of, I suppose, that whole area around soil structure, John, are you seeing much in terms of the results coming in yet from your sustainability program?
Yeah, Jack. So at the moment, we're currently in the soil biology and soil structure assessment phase of the Grass and Agro Soil Sustainability Programme. So all participating farmers, our advisors are out. They're doing this on farm. They're doing the soil biological test. They're sending it off to the lab. And then they're actually doing the grass vest in the farm, in the field. I suppose one thing, Jack, the early results are showing that there's a real problem with soil structure and, I suppose, root mat. So, like, these are key areas that we need to get right. It's almost a good thing, Jack, because it shows there's an awful lot that we could improve on as we start to reduce nitrogen inputs. Because what we're seeing with nitrogen, it's masking all these issues because the grass still looks really green. I suppose if we have poor soil structure and it's our poor root mat, it's kind of like there in the Clare Tip game, Jack, getting a lad put a penalty against you and lad put in the bin for 10 minutes, like, you know, unjustifiably, and maybe some would argue. But I suppose what we need to do is to define this first rather than going with mechanical intervention. That's the key, because you can nearly do more harm than good. You know, so what we have to do is define what the issue is, come up with a solution then with the farmer to rectify this. I suppose it's all tying in, Jack, into your grassland management as well and getting your slurry out early. There's little bits of contradictions that we have to maybe get right and focus on a little bit more. A key area for improvement, Jack, that we have to work on, and I suppose it's really interesting to see that challenge is actually there. Maybe we've gone away from actually turning the sod in the field a little bit, where we would have been more accustomed to in generations gone by.
Yeah, I hear you. And as you say, there was a lot more mixed farming going on and people were kind of closer to the soil in effect, like really like, yeah, yeah. John, 100%. I mean, it is interesting to hear that you like 75%, like it's a big number that, you know, that are that have soil structure or a root mat issue. Like, I mean, it's not something you think, you know, that would be that significant. Like 75%, were you expecting that?
No, not at all, Jack, like, because a lot of these farms are really performing. And listen, this could only be a part of the farm as well, like, you know, and we're trying to focus on maybe problem areas as well, but it's not going to be across the whole farm, but it's a real challenge, like, and there's huge benefits there to actually getting this right. You know, and it's early days, we haven't got all the samples in, we're about 40% of the way there, but like, in one stage, it's brilliant that we have this news because we know that there's improvements that are coming because like we're all really worried. The lads were talking about last week, Jack, we were down in Johnstown Castle and we are in for a serious challenge with nitrogen, you know, and it goes back into the carbon. You know, if we're sequestering carbon and trying to get a credit for it, we're undoing an awful lot of that work with every kilo of nitrogen that we bring into the farm. Do you know, so it's really about cutting your cloth to measure going forward so that we can actually capitalize on whatever potential carbon we are actually sequestering.
Right, folks, that's it for another week in the sunshine on Farm Tech Talk. Thanks for watching and indeed thanks for listening. Thanks to all our guests once again. If you want more from Farmers Journal webinars, go to ifj.ie/webinars and you can listen to the show on the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be back again next week. Until then, stay safe and stay farming.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.